This is The State of Things. I'm Anita Rao. After filming 5 seasons of the Peabody Award-winning series A Chef's Life, Vivian Howard has a new project. And this time, the cameras are pointed in a different direction, away from her. She's still the host of her new show, but her role is more like that of a food ethnographer. The 6-part series is called Somewhere South, and it debuts nationally on PBS tomorrow night. In it, Vivian delves into the histories of common dishes found in cultures around the globe, things like porridge and hand pies, and she introduces her viewers to the Southern chefs who are preserving the legacy of their ancestral foodways. Along the way, she also participates in difficult conversations about race and cultural identity, all of it always over a hot plate of food. Vivian Howard is with me now in studio for a preview. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also joining us is Charlotte Ammons. She is a producer on the show. Welcome back, Charlotte.
Hey, Anita. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Thanks for being here. So tell me about the origins of the show. And it came from this idea that you had that there were really only 20 dishes in the world, which is a number that seems so small.
Yeah. A few years ago, I was bouncing ideas for a new book off my editor, and he was bouncing all of them right back. and I said, you know, I'm really fascinated by this idea that there's really only like 20 dishes in the world. You know, every culture has a noodle. Every culture has a flatbread. Every culture has celebration food. And I was like, I should write a book about that. And like, you have, you know, all these versions represented within the chapters. And he was like, you know, I don't really think you're the person to do that. And he was right this one time. But I was still really fascinated with the idea of it and studying and the idea of studying it and learning about the way the dishes we share present themselves and evolve based on where we land. And so we decided that it was time to bow out of A Chef's Life. And so I started to push for this idea.
And so you are very intentional, even from the kind of preamble in the beginning of each episode, you say, you know, the story of Southern food is more complex than I thought, kind of uncovering that you have space to learn and you want to grow through this series. So tell me about kind of what you wanted to know and learn and felt like you didn't know as much about in terms of Southern food.
Right. So, you know, in A Chef's Life, I feel like we represented a very narrow point of view as it relates to Southern food. I mean, it was my point of view and very specific to my family and you know, crossroads. And I knew enough to know that there was a lot more out there and that there were so many communities represented and so many, you know, different ways of being Southern and ways of eating Southern. And I wanted to know more, and I wanted to be part of a narrative on TV that shed light on that.
So Charlotte, take me to the producer's table, to the conversations that you all had when you were putting together the show and the questions that you really wanted to be able to answer, the things you wanted to explore in this very different kind of show from A Chef's Life.
Yeah, I think we immediately knew that this show would be different than A Chef's Life in terms of the amount of research that would be involved, like since we weren't just following Vivian's personal and professional trajectory, we would have to do a little bit more delving. Similar to A Chef's Life, we still connect each episode and each place we visit to people that Vivian already had a professional or personal relationship with, so that we're not just parachuting into a place blindly. But the most exciting thing for me, and I think I can speak for Andrea and Victoria, who are the other two producers, was just the excitement about having to find cultures that we, in our research, found interesting and learned a lot more about as we were researching. So what, to me, was the primary difference for us as producers, different than A Chef's Life, mostly with A Chef's Life, you know, we knew we were going to Mr. Warren's farm, or this we didn't really know. I personally didn't know a lot about all of the cultures that we were exploring. So it was really, for me, a learning process as well.
I want to get into some of the episodes now, and I want to speak first about the episode about hand pies. So let's listen to a clip, and then we can talk a little bit more. You traveled to Fairmont, West Virginia, and you met a retired third-generation coal miner. Let's listen to what he had to say about pepperoni rolls and why they were taken into the mines.
A sandwich, the bread gets soggy.
Yeah, it falls apart a little bit.
Right. And remember, you're in a coal mine. It's dark. it's cold. They would make a little shack somewhere in the mines, and it would be furnished with whatever they could steal from wherever they could get it. It usually had a heater in it, and they would cook on these things.
Oh.
Many a time, fresh baked pepperoni rolls. And you can imagine, you're in an environment where there is nothing else.
Right.
There's no horizon. And here this smell would come down the track, and it was just like, it would draw like lemmings or whatever. You know, people would come out of the woodwork to get this stuff.
So that was Thomas Manuel, who was featured in the first episode of Vivian Howard's new television show, Somewhere South. It debuts on PBS tomorrow night, and I'm here with Vivian Howard and one of the show's producers, Sherlette Ammons. So in this clip, you're looking at hand pies and how they were used and produced mostly for laborers. And I was watching this episode, and I was texting with my mom because my grandfather and all of my uncles worked in the mines in the northeast of England. And I was like, Mom, what did Granddad used to take into the mines? And she was like, a minced pie or a pasty. And I was like, exactly. So tell me about this kind of food that transcends culture but has the same purpose and function.
Yeah, well, so that's one of the things we were trying to learn and deduce in every episode is, like, what does this dish mean? You know, and hand pies was, a dish of convenience. Convenience for the eater, definitely not for the maker, which is one of the other things we learned. And then with greens are a dish of, like, comfort and goodness, and I won't go on and reveal all of our what we learned, but hand pies were they were there so you could have one hand that was cleanish and one hand that could be working, whether that be like an apple hand pie in Winston-Salem or Eastern North Carolina, or a pepperoni roll in West Virginia, or an empanada in South America. You know, all of these. All hand pies represent the same thing.
Hmm.
And, you know, in my journey of learning to trying to make them fast, it became very clear that there was labor on either end of a hand pie. The person making it put in a lot of labor for the person eating it who was out in the world laboring.
And it's so interesting, too, because, you know, some of these foods that were made for a very functional purpose end up getting glorified in various, like, restaurant spaces where you have these decadent-looking empanadas with all of this kind of extra stuff on the side. So there's so many interesting economic conversations behind all of these food items. I wonder for you, Sherlette, how did you all look at those economic forces and how they shaped these various pieces of food that you chose?
When you look at foods like porridge, which I was the lead producer on the porridge episode, porridge was a food that was made to fill your belly and allow you a lot of energy if you had a long day of work. A big pot of porridge for us in North Carolina, our porridge is grits, could go a long way. So a lot of these foods had their own function that often was about, one, feeding a lot of people and stretching out a dish so that it could last for the duration of a work day. And we found that not only with hand pies, but also with porridge. Greens also had that similar effect. So that theme came up quite regularly that we found.
Yeah. So you talked about the porridge episode, which you were the lead producer on. Let's go into that episode and listen to a clip. This is Chef B.J. Dennis, and his cooking is inspired by his Geechee Gullah ancestry. And in this clip, he's standing in fields on a rice plantation in South Carolina with Vivian, and you'll hear her voice first.
To be here on this rice plantation, what does that mean for you?
You know, it's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, because you see the beauty of it, but you also know the pain behind it. You have to come out here to let the ancestors know that you still recognize them, because you see the greatness that they brought with them, but it was shackled. Many people died in these rice fields. I mean, the Lowcountry is one of the richest places in the world in the colonial period because of rice.
Because of rice.
And that rice was grown by the knowledge of West Africans. It's never talked about, but they specifically sought out Africans on those coastal regions because they had the knowledge of growing rice, which was science and technology, astronomy. All those things were brought here.
That was Chef B.J. Dennis talking about the history of rice in Charleston, South Carolina, and he is part of a new show from Chef Vivian Howard called Somewhere South. It debuts tomorrow night on PBS, and I'm here with Vivian, one of the show's producers, Sherlette Ammons. So tell me about Chef B.J. Dennis and why you wanted to explore this Gullah Geechee connection with him.
Well, you know, the Sea Islands are such a storied place, and B.J. is kind of, you know, the disciple, the modern day disciple of Geechee Gullah cooking and culture. And, you know, there's so many misunderstandings, miseducation around our history in the South and as it relates to slavery and the foundation of the economy of the Low Country. And, you know, it seemed to me that he would be, it seemed to Sherlette, really, who found BJ, that he would be a wonderful guide to understanding this more. And the most amazing thing about that episode, and maybe about the entire season of the show, is, you know, the nuanced history that we were able to learn. You know, whenever I thought of slavery, I always thought of labor. And
physical labor.
Physical labor. And that's, you know, that's the lesson that I had learned. But, you know, what BJ taught me is that, you know, in the case of the rice culture and Charleston and the Low Country, slavery in many cases was about knowledge and skill and expertise and science and very much the economy of the Low Country and therefore the South and in many ways our nation was built on that knowledge. And it's not about labor at all. And that just like, that was a lot to understand, and I'm so honored that we get to, the show gets to be a part of sharing that with more people.
Yeah, well, there's a lot in that episode of you kind of reckoning with the material that you're hearing and your role as someone who has this platform to tell these stories. And at one point, you sit down with this table of all either their chefs, their, you know, culinary experts, culinary historians, all Black folk, and talking about kind of how, what is the story that they want to tell about Southern food. Take me into that moment and what that experience was like for you.
Well, you can probably tell by looking at it. I was very nervous. I was insecure about the conversation and my right to be in it. And up front, I wanted to, you know, address that and say that, you know, because of A Chef's Life, I have a platform, and I have earned the trust of millions of people. And, you know, I see this as an opportunity for them to share what they want to regarding soul food and their history with those people. And that I have a platform and I want to share it. And it was still incredibly nerve-wracking. It was very uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable for everyone. And truthfully, we didn't get that far at the table. But I think it's important for people to see that we can have uncomfortable conversations. There's no reason we shouldn't be able to, as long as everyone has mutual respect for one another.
And there's not always a resolution,
right.
I think, which is what makes it so relatable, is you can sit around and you can all be really uncomfortable and you might not walk away best friends. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone is happy and comes together. And how do you walk that dance as a producer, Sherlette, of, you know, setting up these situations because you really want to hear these people's experience, but you don't want it to be gimmicky. You want it to be real.
Right. And I think, you know, in an uncomfortable situation like the one with the round table with Dr. Harris and Tony Tipton-Martin and Ashley Ashanti and Chef Ricky Moore. I think the dance is, and the thing that I think Vivian did a great job of keeping in mind, is that for people to feel comfortable sharing their stories, it has to be a first-person account of that story. So making sure, and Vivian was always really, really thoughtful in making sure that she wasn't taking words out of people's mouths and taking stories out of people's mouths and giving people the platform to share their own story. I think in that sense, it kind of reimagines the idea of quote-unquote host and the idea that, you know, just because, you know, this show has Vivian's name on the tagline, it certainly isn't all about Vivian. And for her to be comfortable with that, I think, speaks to the moment we're living in and the conversations that are happening, not only in food, but about ownership and appropriation and how do we shift that as we figure out what the role of somebody like Vivian, a white woman, Southern, of mediocre wit and humor.
only a producer can say that to a host.
And how we're very close.
and how, you know, she can step back so other people whose cultures are underrepresented can have a platform and a voice. And I think I'm proud of the job we've done with that.
So, Vivian, for you, as you begin prepare to kind of present this series to the world, what is the narrative of Southern food that you're hoping to interrupt the most, or the stereotype of Southern food that you're hoping to interrupt the most with this new series?
First of all, very succinctly, that it's not monolithic. Southern food looks like a lot of things, and it's always evolving. And to be mindful and considerate of the fact that, you know, we all move from place to place, and the food traditions that we bring to the places where we land, they end up shaping that place. And that place shapes our food traditions. And so, you know, there's no ownership, and there's no one way, and there's no one face. You know, the South is a microcosm of the rest of the nation, and our food is just that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for speaking with me. I've been talking to Vivian Howard, host of the new PBS show Somewhere South, and Charlotte Ammons, one of the producers for Somewhere South. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having us. Appreciate it.
You can find out more about the show at our website, stateofthings.org. You can also sign up there for a newsletter to get a daily preview of our lineup. The State of Things is produced by Amanda Magnus, Grant Hall of Mormon, and Katie Barron. Jenny Lawson is a technical director, and Josie Taurus is our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Anita Rao.